You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Kevin Miller and Tommy Ahlquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
Welcome once again to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. Tommy Ahlquist, Kevin Miller, and Tommy, it's all about the blue today.
Yeah, it's all about the blue a lot for me. I don't know. So I'm really excited about today. We've got Brad Lorando here. And I think what we want to do today, I mean, our podcast, we have an audience that's business focused. A lot of entrepreneurs listen to our show. We get a lot of good feedback, a lot of Boise State fans. And I think in my time here, you've been here 20 years, just to watch the incredible impact a university can have on a community. Business-wise, talent-wise, economic development-wise, and where sports is played. So that's exciting. I think we'll be talking a little bit to Brad about that. And then also would love to hear just the future of what he sees today. So we're really excited. Kevin, I know you're a big sports fan too. So this will be a fun podcast for us.
Well, and I think this will give someone an inspiration to really write that blueprint if Brad will reveal the secrets of the blue. I mean, you talk about a business, how, you know, here we have Boise State succeeding, outspent by millions.
Yes.
And yet they've created such a national program that's the envy of the nation, Tommy.
Yeah, it is the envy of the nation. And everywhere you go and you talk about the branding, the excellence, the immediate evokes just excellence when you talk about BSU. That's happened over a relatively short period of time. Only other thing I'll say is, you know, it's like we don't remember the recession anymore.
Right.
It's like it didn't even happen. But it was just a few years ago, we were all in the fetal position. Everything had shut down. And what was the one shining star that was still going at it? Developing a campus, growing, bringing market share into the state when everything else was dead. It was BSU. So Brad Lorando, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, excited to join you guys. And I wondered why Kevin had the helmet and shoulder pads on and was ready to get after it when I walked in the building. And he was harking back to his days as like a middle linebacker ready to attack right there. So
he's ready.
Yeah, no, just listening to you guys talk about it, you know, sports and in particular, you know, a game like football, really, it brings people together. You know, I mean, I think it's an amazing thing that Boise State football or college football in general, just the passion that a fan base and an alumni in a city or community can have for their team. And I think that's what's kind of magical about sports. It's an unscripted drama that kind of keeps you literally on the edge of your seats. But as you alluded to, you know, Kevin, it's become such a major big business now. I mean, college athletics has changed so much in the last 5 years, let alone 10, 15, 20 years. And the progression and the rate that Boise State has moved from, say, like 1996 to the year 2019 in 23 years, which is kind of an infancy in college athletics or tradition and where we were and where we are now and the story we've had. There may never be one like it again that happens that way, just in the growth and kind of bursting on the scene and then trying to keep up with these so-called big boys out there.
I have so much I want to ask you, a lot, but before we get into Boise State, Brad, tell us a little bit about you.
About me, yeah.
And specifically, yeah. I'm not going to let you get off the hook. I mean, this is Inspire Excellence Podcast.
Yeah.
Tell us how you were raised. Tell us a little bit about your growing up, your history with the institution, but a little bit about what's driven you. Because I know, you know, for those of you who don't know Brad, behind the scenes, you've been an integral part of what's happened here. I want to know what drives you a little bit.
Yeah, I would say that for me, I grew up, you know, in a household that was driven by going to church on Sunday, you know, and really having a, you know, strong faith that way, but also going to the playground Monday through Friday and Saturday. And whether it was soccer or basketball or football or whatever, trying to surround yourself with people that were on a mission, you know, that were trying to strive to do something better. And I always use sports as kind of that background. So right now I've got a long title. I'm our senior associate athletic director, but I'm also our chief of staff for Coach Harsin and our football program. So while I'm constantly trying to do stuff for our entire athletic department and the 400 plus student athletes, because for me, sports was such an integral part of growing up and what I was able to do and teaching me to be a leader career and also to understand adversity and how you get better and strive for excellence. I want to give back in that way to help all of our student athletes. I do have a major focus on the football program and what we do. I had the, you know, it was kind of a unique opportunity that I think helped shape me growing up. My dad was a civil engineer at the time where hydroelectric projects were booming all over the country. And we spent a lot of time moving from city to city where he might go and start up a project for 9 months or 15 months or 18 months and then move on to another one. So I went to about 10 different schools growing up, went to 3 different high schools, lived in California, lived in Idaho, you know, kind of bounced around. And so I was able to gravitate toward folks that were on the playground, you know, that tried to play sports. And I thought that was really important in my upbringing. And so when I go and talk to other youth or I get into a recruiting pitch or whatever, it's like, hey, who do you roll with? Who have you surrounded yourself with? Because you are who you roll with and you're going to be affiliated with those people that you surround yourself with. And if you do that with people that are on the edge or that are skipping school or that aren't doing things the right way, you're pretty soon going to be affiliated that way. Whereas if you affiliate yourself with people that want to be leaders, that are getting their homework done, that are doing things the right way, that's pretty much what you're going to then assume as your characteristics. And so that's a little bit about me as I went up. I remember when I was 10 years old, I watched the national championship game. Didn't live in Boise at that point, but Boise State played Eastern Kentucky and won in the final seconds. And I said, that was inspiring. That was really awesome. And there were probably 6,000 people in a 70,000 seat stadium in Sacramento, but it really, you know, kind of grabbed my attention. And you know, when you're little, you know, you become a fan of the New England Patriots right now because of Tom Brady or whatever, and what they've done, or, you know, but that really made an impression on me that game and that inspiration to drive down the field in 40 seconds and score really made an impact on me.
Did you say you lived in Idaho some growing up?
I did live in Idaho some growing up. My dad's, you know, family was always a Boise, you know, was in Boise. So Thanksgiving, Christmas, visiting was kind of always home base. So whether we were over in Eastern Idaho or down in California, we had kind of headquarters with the family here, and ended up coming up here my last couple years of high school and went to Meridian High School and then started Centennial High School, first graduating class. And then, you know, was able to do some things after school and ended up back here. But it was always driven by this desire to be in sports and to be able to give back, and kind of started out at Boise State in more of a graduate assistant role. Pokey Allen was the head football coach then, and you kind of came in. Gene Blamire was the athletic director, and you kind of came in and said, hey, I'll shovel snow, I'll cut up film, I'll do whatever it has to do. I just want to be a part of this thing. And where this place has come and where it's at right now and the things I've been able to see have been really incredible. And I feel like, I've had a part in seeing that happen.
So how many years have you been?
I've celebrated my 25th year in the Boise State Athletic Department. It started out, like I said, you know, you kind of making, you know, graduate assistant wage of, you know, $500 a month, but grinding it out and paying your dues. But along the way, I always was one of those people that wanted to absorb something else that was going on so I could make myself better. And I think that's helped pay off, whether it's been, you know, in the broadcast part of it, the marketing, the sponsorships, the football, the operational, the compliance, whatever it is. I felt like I wanted to learn what other people were doing so that eventually I could continue to move up. And I've been very blessed to be a part of an athletic department that's been on the cutting edge and progressive.
So Brad, 25 years.
Yeah.
You think of the presidents of the university that have come and gone, athletic directors come and gone, football coaches that have come and gone, basketball.
Yeah.
Think of the program over that length of time. You're pretty unique in your perspective to what's gone on there. And I agree. I mean, you'll be hard pressed to find another story like this where you've taken some, a university that's gone from where Boise State was 25 years ago to today,
where it is now.
So tell us from your vantage point on, I know you're here for talk probably about athletics a lot, but the university has kind of followed suit. Who sticks out? If I had to ask you, tell me the top three names
that stick out,
that come to mind, that because this doesn't happen on its own. There had to be vision and leadership and strategy.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about how it happened.
Well, I would say this, and I graduated from Boise State, so I'm an alum, and went to Boise State when the campus was much smaller. And you know, in a lot of ways, I always kind of say I went to Boise State before it was cool to go to Boise State in some regards. And Dr. John Kaiser might have been one of the, you know, he was a very progressive president that wanted to push forward, wanted to have things done. But he had a couple behind the scenes people like Dr. David Taylor, who was one of the vice presidents that I got to know as a student, that was, did a lot of things to advance the university and put it ahead that didn't always get noticed. And then when you had an athletic director like Gene Blamire, who hired me basically a year out of school and gave me an opportunity to do some things and use my talents to help the department, you know, for somebody to go and put a blue football field in. And I mean, talk about risky. I mean, talk about taking,
tell us about that. Cause you were there.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically it was, you know, the, you know, mid 1980s and, you know, Gene, you got a pretty good 1AA football program, and Gene's a young athletic director and facing, you know, the idea of, hey, I gotta spend $750,000 or whatever it is to put an artificial turf down. Why the heck should it be green? Why don't we do something that gets us, you know, to some extent recognized, that might be a little bit out of the box? But in a day and age where, you know, sometimes tradition is hard to compromise, not only do you have to convince your president and look at the options to do it, but you also have to kind of stick your neck out on the line a little bit, because it could go one of two ways. People could be all of a sudden, what in the heck is going on? And then you're done. Your career might be over at that point. Or it can go the way it went, which is, holy cow, that's pretty unique. And then the whole myth kind of grows through it. And so it was kind of one of those things. Why should it be green? You know, let's do something that is just flat out crazy, you know, that is completely out of the box. And, you know, probably for the first number of years, it was a little bit like, okay, Smurf turf, and that's that school in Idaho, and they play, you know, 1AA, and yeah, that's a nice little story, but that's not real college football. That's not tradition. And obviously the SEC schools have played on grass at that point. Why would it be a different color of turf? And then when you join the FBS ranks and you join the Big West Conference, you start having a nationally televised bowl game every year. And then all of a sudden we start winning games and crack the top 25 and start beating teams like Oklahoma and Georgia and Virginia Tech and playing very close against the Wisconsins or whatever it is. They start going, okay, that actually is a college football powerhouse. And that's a power program. And believe me, it has become the symbol of our university, of our city, of our state in a lot of ways, about just blue collar. We're going to outwork you. We play on a blue football field, but we also are going to just outwork you. We're going to grind. We're going to have grit. We're going to be blue collar in everything we do. And I think it's become our identity. I really do.
I love it.
You know, Brad, there are so many questions that we have, but from a sports marketing perspective, do you think there'll ever be another time in Boise State history when you have a coach like Chris Peterson, Kellen Moore, you go into Georgia, you go into Virginia Tech, you're on the cover of Sports Illustrated, the college football preview?
Yeah.
Well, what did that do for the program? Obviously the Oklahoma win, but yeah. You know, here you have generation two, if you will.
Yeah. I think there was a perfect storm that kind of happened for, you know, for us, around the time of that first Fiesta Bowl. And, you know, I'll even take, you know, 30 seconds to go back even a little ways further when Pokey Allen, you know, kind of inspired the team to get to the national championship. And that was my first year in 94 when we played Youngstown State and beat Marshall on the blue and went to Marshall and played in the national championship.
By the way, Marshall was a dominant program.
We just wanted to try to be like them.
Right. Along with Youngstown State.
Youngstown State, yeah.
Right. Those were like Alabama and Oklahoma today.
Yeah. And Marshall was getting ready to move to the FBS level, and they started bringing in the Chad Penningtons and the Randy Mosses. And, you know, they were the program that you're like, we want to be like that. And so go ahead.
A lot of people start with the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah. But it goes back.
But it goes way back.
Yeah.
Tell us, because the other thing that's interesting is the quality coaches you had.
Yep.
Even before Pete. You know, I used to always, friends would call me from all the country, like, what on earth is going on?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, in college, if you've got a great coach, and a great quarterback, you're going to do okay.
Yeah.
And for years, you know, Dirk Cutter, then Hawk, then Pete. I mean, you look at the quarterbacks that came through.
Yep.
There was quality there.
Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, Pokey got us back to that national championship game and inspired it. And then Dr. Kaiser and Gene we're saying, okay, we can go to the next level. We can move from 1AA, now known as FCS, to FBS. And at that point, when Pokey got sick and passed away, there was a point in the program where it's like, okay, where do we go? And Houston Nutt came in for 1 year. You guys remember,
yeah, right?
And Houston came in and he's, you know, it was, hey, you know how you spell fun? It's W-I-N. And he got people rallied up and motivated and guys were ready to run through brick walls. And we beat Idaho up in the Kibbe Dome. And all of a sudden,
do they still have a football team?
What's that?
Do they still have a football team?
Now, Tommy.
But that was the thing. I mean,
sorry.
I think they're still going up. Yeah. But then Dirk Cutter came in. So Houston came in at the right time. Then Dirk Cutter came in at the right time and said, we can take it even further. Offensive genius. We got to not just meet underneath the stadium. We got to start looking at how we get sponsorships done and more revenue coming in and our recruiting base and maybe some, you know, some private charters to go recruiting. And just this is how you have to do it. Because he'd been at Missouri and Boston College and Oregon. And then when he left, Dan Hawkins was the guy that sat in hot tubs and flipped burgers with Carl's Juniors and got out in the community and promoted this thing and got fans excited. And then you come along as a guy named Chris Peterson, who was kind of this mad scientist in the back room drawing up offensive plays and we're scoring all these points. And then he takes over at head coach and he hires two 29-year-old coordinators, one of which was Brian Harsin and the other one is Justin Wilcox, who's the head coach at Cal now. And on that staff, he had Sean Kugler, who came from the NFL that was a head coach at UTEP. And you have these names, Pete Kwiatkowski and all these names, Uringa. That staff was just this perfect storm. And you had this senior driven team led by a Corey Hall and you've got Jared Zabransky. And all of a sudden we go and beat Oklahoma, which changed everything overnight. And now all of a sudden Boise State is on the map and you start bringing in players like Austin Pettis and Kellen Moore, this guy from Prosser, Washington, that we hear about because he comes to our camp and he has Eastern Washington and Idaho on him and us. And we're like, well, let's give this guy a shot. And then you go 50-3. Think about that. 50-3 over a 4-year period with wins over Oregon, Georgia, Virginia Tech, TCU. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, these dudes are for real. And that kind of story just doesn't happen. I mean, it doesn't happen. It's really miraculous. And
but to go into Georgia and Virginia Tech in that moment, what did it mean for the program, both marketing and revenue wise?
Well, you can't put a dollar value on the marketing of it because, you know, it's millions and millions of eyeballs and exposures and being on the cover of Sports Illustrated and on ESPN and your name across the ticker and them doing stories on you on College Football Game Day. All those things, you can't put a price tag on what the value brought to the university. And the other thing that we forget about at that point, too, and this part of this perfect storm, you get a Chris Peterson and you get a Kellen Moore and you get all these things. But there was a university president in Bob Custer that came in that wanted to transform this university and really put some cachet into how we're going to do this, whether it's building buildings, growing enrollment, using football as a window to the world from a marketing standpoint, and getting on the backs of that and saying this can be a great urban research metropolitan institution of higher education. And over that 10-year window, it was like, holy cow, you know, student enrollment takes off. You win a lot of football games. You build buildings. You bring in better faculty and professors and, you know, administrative staff. And all of a sudden, you go from 12,000 students to 25 or 26,000. Boise grows in the same thing. And you get out here to Meridian and Eagle and all those areas. And all of a sudden, this community, they're the vibe and the pulse of it, you know, really is just an unbelievable feel. I mean, and I think, you know, I think we're seeing that. And we're also trying to say, that was remarkable, but how do we keep it going now? You know, and how do we keep pushing it?
Touch on that a little bit for me. I was looking up today, getting ready for you to come in here. You know, you just look at in 2012, I think you capped out ticket sales, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Right. And then it, and I just look back at last year's number dropped down a little bit, right?
So you're kind of on a decline that way.
You're on a little decline, right? I go to all those games. We have season tickets, basketball and football. And
I went and checked out where your seats were. You got decent seats there.
I know we got decent seats. We have fun. But I think about
the Valley and how it's growing. And it frankly frustrates me a little bit.
Well, it's frustrating, but
I get it. But I just, it's such a great product and we're so blessed to have this thing. And I just, sometimes I just think, even on the basketball side. So,
yeah. And I think television has changed college athletics and sports in general, because there's such an appetite for every game to be on TV and media rights and the exposure level, where you can watch so many games, and now, you know, kickoff times and windows that you got to put them in. And, I don't think the appetite for college football or college sports has decreased, but I do think the availability of it and how you can get it mobily and on an iPad or on your television, has changed it to the point where you're seeing across the board that attendance is struggling, because of ticket prices or the amount of revenue you have to generate. And is it something where a family of four or five want to go to the game, you know, park, buy the concessions, be in the stadium? It better be a really, really good fan experience and environment, or they can sit at home and watch it on TV or go to a party and do that. So I think that
how much do you think those late starts have to do?
Well, I would say the late starts have impacted us, you know, quite a bit. I still think if there's a game, let's take, for example, the next 3 years following the 2019 season. I don't know if you looked at our schedules ahead, probably a little bit, but in 2020, Florida State comes to the Blue. Yeah. In 2021, Oklahoma State comes to the Blue. In 2022, Michigan State comes to the Blue. Plus you have BYU in 20 and 22 on that home schedule. Those games could be played at 2 a.m. and we're going to get 37,000 people and they're going to sell that thing out two times over. It's when you might have a game that isn't like that, where an 8:15 start time may impact the number of people coming. So I do think it does have an impact. Fortunately for us, it may impact us on 2,000 or 3,000 fans, because we're still at about 95% capacity on average attendance. So you make up some of those season ticket sales by individual games and how is the team performing and how's the other team. Like last year, we had no idea that Utah State was going to be a top 20 team and sitting at 11-1 when they rolled in. So that was a boon to have that in the last game. And so you're going to make some of that on individual tickets, but season tickets, people want to plan out. They're into, you know, either not planning out long-term or planning out long-term. And if they don't know kickoff times until 10 days beforehand, which TV kind of dictates for us, it makes it hard on season tickets.
How much, the other question I had for you, I got a lot of questions. So Kevin, you're going to have to stop me and jump in here.
No, I'm
when you talk about the stadium experience and you look at what's happened in sports nationally, there's a pretty high standard now, right?
Yep, no question.
And so you as an athletic department, as a university, have always got to be thinking, okay, what's the next thing we can do? Do you have any things you can talk about today as far as, you know, I think about Taco Bell Arena and I think about the stadium. You know, what are the next wants? What to take you to that next level from the consumer experience?
Well, I think fan experience is so ultra critical, because you have to, not only the passion of the game and being able to watch it in person and experience, there's nothing like experiencing it in the stadium versus watching it on TV at home, but you have to make that experience one where when they leave, they're like, I cannot wait to go back. I don't care who they're playing next week or 2 weeks, where I cannot wait to go back, because it created memories for my son or my daughter or my mother that I brought to the game, whatever it is. And so I think it starts with a lot of things that have to make it comparable to the experience you watch on TV. So video boards, you know, sound systems, what are you doing on replay angles? How are you giving that person in the stadium the chance to see the same thing on a replay that they might see at home or on their iPad? And that goes back into connectivity in the stadium. What's your Wi-Fi like? Do you have to put in Wi-Fi boxes? How do you upgrade it? Because if you're not able to Snapchat, post something on Instagram, talk to your friend, especially with the generation that we're in, then you're going to get very tired or bored very easily. When the attention span of the average 19-year-old right now is 7 seconds, you've got to be able to continue to
I'm surprised
them.
It's that much.
It might be less than that
teenagers.
Now. Actually, within the last 30 seconds, it's gone down to 4.3 seconds, So, but I think that experience of the connectivity and the mobile device, plus the interactive, and even when you look at it from a business standpoint of sponsorships, okay, before it was just about a sign on the wall or getting your logo on the video board. Well, now it's how are you connected to them through their digital device or their mobile device. So I envision a time in the next couple of years where we've got some sort of an app or a mobile ability to send to somebody's phone any replay angle they want that may not appear on the video board, but you're going to be able to see it from this replay angle inside the stadium so that you have that opportunity. You can order concessions to your seat. You know, how is the parking? You know, how are you doing the pregame experience with Tent Village or concessions or food or bands that are out there? You've got to create a 6 or 7 hour experience for them 6 times a year so that they cannot not want to buy season tickets. And then in basketball, you got to take that to the same thing or whatever you're doing. And
we've had a rough year this year,
Brad. Yeah, it's you know, and I think sometimes that happens. You get a couple.
It does. I feel. I mean, the team. I've loved watching the team.
They're a gritty bunch.
They're gritty. They work hard, and it seems like at the very end of the game, it's like I read some statistic this last week.
There's a little bit of luck.
The most unlucky team in the country, or whatever. Yeah. But boy, it's been fun to watch. But especially that shot against Nevada.
Oh well, and there's some games like that where that shot doesn't go in. How does that change your season?
Yeah.
Completely, 100%.
But you know what? When he was dribbling down, he had that look in his eye. Oh, everyone in the stadium knew that thing was going.
Well, and you got a team like
Those guys graduate or go to the NBA already?
Martin brothers. Like they've been around for like 4 years.
I know. Years. Yeah, can't stand it.
Brad, let me try and get you back on the.
You got to rein Tommy in,
especially when it comes to basketball. Yeah. But
it is March now. March Madness is coming up. But anyway, we'll get
Boy, that's 2-on-1 here. But let me, Brad, how big was it having College Game Day here on the Blue? And take us behind the scenes of what that entailed, because they just don't flip a coin. It was a big game, getting people there, the logistics.
Yeah. That was in 2010. We played Oregon State. They were nationally ranked. We had come off the Vo-Tech. I'm trying to think. I think it might have been the Vo-Tech. Where Oregon State was 24th, 23rd. We were the mid teens there. It was a great regional game. You know, Pac-12 versus Mountain West team. And I think there was a fascination with Kellen Moore and the Blue and this team from Boise, Idaho, that. Could they honestly be the, not just burst the BCS bubble, but actually play in the national championship game? And so I think there was a lot of intrigue that way. But when you've got, the Aaron Andrews and that type of group coming, the Lee Corsos, and you've got to figure out, okay, we got to have a mascot head there because he always puts that on to pick the winner, but they come very early and it's like, okay, how do we get our students and our fans to want to be out there waiting in line at 4 a.m. when we've got a game, not till 7 o'clock or whatever it was. And it was on ABC Sports that game. So it was a prime time national televised one, but they bring in so much equipment and so much staging. They basically had to go out and build this, this big stage in the middle of the field, but they had to keep the fans back. And then there were only a certain amount that could get up by the cattle guards. And it was almost like having two major productions come in. You had ABC Sports that was coming in to set up for the game. And then you had Game Day coming in with all their stuff. And it was logistically, it was a lot going on, and it was something that we weren't accustomed to, but we were like, heck, we're going to take this challenge on and we're going to get it done. And our fans responded. The game day atmosphere was unbelievable. And the game that night was just out of control. And, we won the game and it was a huge win, and we want to get them back. I mean, I'll tell you that. I mean, we've had some close calls with them coming back, but that's still on the bucket list for us, is not to have it just be once. Let's get them back here again. So
how many hours of sleep did you get that week?
I don't think we slept that week at all. Literally, I mean, you're running on adrenaline at that point. So sure. It's cool. So
I've got so many questions. I've got so many questions. Tell us about the intensity of Coach Harsin.
Well, that's a good question, because there are very few people that have lived and breathed this thing like he has.
Yeah.
And he's Boise born, Capital High School graduate, walk on as quarterback, earned himself a scholarship, had a chance to, be recruited by Pokey Allen's staff, play for Tom Mason, then Houston Nutt, then Dirk Cutter, then coach with Dan Hawkins, be underneath Chris Peterson as a coordinator, be a coordinator for Pete, then go and coach under Mac Brown, who's a legend in coaching, and now back at North Carolina. So just the coaching tree and the names that he had to go through, from having a coach pass away, in Pokey Allen that recruited him, to then bringing in a Houston Nutt and then a Dirk Cutter, two very different styles, then to be a graduate assistant. He was basically a guy that after he got done playing, wanted to get into coaching, but didn't really, how do I break in? And I mean, it's so hard. And got an opportunity to be a graduate assistant and kicked tail at that role. Then got a chance to be a tight end coach, kicked butt at that role, and then moved into a, you know, being a coordinator, did a great job there. And I would just say his intensity is what drives him. You know, his striving for perfection, but settling for excellence is kind of a motivating factor. You know,
give us a glimpse into that, because I think we all see it.
Yeah.
I think it's inspiring to see. I think you watch a program. There's a lot of aspects to running a program, right? It's a big business.
It's a CEO type of job.
You've got these kids that are coming out of high school, coming into you away from home, trying to manage them. You got the X's and O's of the game.
Yep.
Give us a little glimpse into the intensity of just the work ethic you need to have.
I would say being a head football coach at this level right now is basically like being the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, where you have to be able to trust and hire people that you can delegate to, but you also have to be glued into what they're doing so that no aspect of the organization can ever be on autopilot. I mean, it has to be intentional in everything that you do. And he brings that focus and intensity that it doesn't matter if it's the smallest detail. If it's tacking up something in the locker room on the board, put the tacks in all four corners so the paper's not folded over and something might be missed or it just looks bad. You know, if there's something laying on the floor, it's the head coach's responsibility or all the way down to pick that up, because championship teams don't have something laying on the floor and walk by it. You know, it's that kind of intensity that I think he brings, but he backs it up with his actions and how he does it. And there's no question that guy on the sidelines, when you get glimpses of him for 5 or 10 seconds on TV, he is an intense individual because he is highly competitive, but that's not always, you know, him as well. If you get to know Brian Harsin away from that and the family man that he is and the devotion he has for his kids and his wife. I mean, he and Kess were junior high sweethearts at Hillside Junior High, and they've been together for a long, long time. And she's been on this journey with him, and I think really helps inspire him, you know, along the way and can keep him a little bit even grounded and even keeled. But I think that there's a passion and a fire inside of him from these coaches that he's been around to just not settle for being something that's average. I mean, how do you fight like hell every day not to be average? And I think that's an inspiring thing to be a part of every single day.
How bummed are you about Andy leaving?
You know, that's one of those things where, you know, no sugarcoating it. That guy was an instrumental part of what we are at Boise State. You know, I remember when we recruited him and I was part of, you know, him coming up here and being a player and graduating and then getting into the coaching, you know, side of things. And I think just, you know, as a mentor and a coach and a developer of players and young men, there aren't very many out there like Andy Avalos. And, you know, he's a, and just like he does there, you know, he's a tremendous individual and family person, and just, you know, just grounded in the right way to do things. Oregon's getting a really good coach and a really good person, and I'm excited for him and his professional, you know, chance that way. And I'm excited to stay in touch with him on his career. And I think he wants to be a head coach, you know, somewhere down the line. And you know, he's one of those guys that's going to bleed blue for a long time. And you know, who knows? I mean, the paths may cross again, you know, with Andy. And you always, but he's one of those that, you know, like any program, no one coach or one player is ever going to define the program. He left his mark in a very positive way, left this place better than even when he found it and got here. And if you can do that, you've done something special. Now it's up to us as a program to go and find the next person that we develop into that, or move within, or bring in somebody that can make sure that culture. We've got a very good culture, a very strong culture, and a very strong process for how we do things. And we will go get another excellent coach that will mentor young men and other coaches within the program to make them the best they can be. And I think that's what separates Boise State.
Brad, we take a look at a few years ago, we had the roller coaster world of conference realignment.
Oh, yeah.
you know, the WAC, Mountain West, the PAC, the Big 12, Boise State's role in that.
Yeah.
If you could have a crystal ball, where do you see the whole conference realignment going in the next few years?
You know, that's tricky because, you know, a couple of years ago, it just seems like it was always ever changing and it was a shifting landscape and so much of it driven by television media markets, you know, a Rutgers going to the Big Ten. I mean, if you remember back a few years ago, Boise State and San Diego State were heading to the Big East, and we were going to be playing in a conference that had Louisville and Rutgers and Memphis and Cincinnati, and you were going to be in the top 50 media markets in the country. And then all of a sudden the Big Ten goes and grabs Rutgers, and, you know, the ACC grabs Louisville, and then it kind of, you know, kind of dissolved that whole thing, and we stayed in the Mountain West. Well, so much of it was driven by eyeballs on television. Well, now with the digital aspect of things, it's not as much about eyeballs on television as it is about what's the total reach that your brand is allowed to put you in, whether it's, you know, on an iPad or Facebook or Amazon or whatever it might be that's going to change over the next couple of years on the media landscape. And also, what do you bring from a power standpoint to that conference on your brand? I think Boise State's brand is extremely powerful nationally because of what our football program has done and other athletic programs. I mean, our women's sports are doing as well as they've ever done. And our basketball program has been to the NCAA tournament a couple times in the last 5 years. So our brand is extremely strong, to the point where if there is expansion out on the West Coast, and namely you look at the Pac-12 conference, that I do think Boise State has an extremely good chance to be in a Pac-14 or a Pac-16. The question is, why and when do they have that expansion possibilities?
You know? Is there like an internal checklist for that? Because when you look at those expansions, especially the Pac-12, which I, you know, we'd love that, you know. It is academics. Yep. It's research. It's sure. All the other programs. And is that where baseball fits in? Because I mean, I think if you look at a pathway forward, you got to kind of check all those boxes.
Yep.
And is that something that's discussed, or is it just kind of unspoken?
I would say there's a lot of things, and you can read out a lot of, you know, whether they're rumors or urban legends or myths or whatever. And I think all of them have a hint of fact on, you know, what are your research dollars? What's your academic reputation? What, you know, what is your, you know, ratings in Carnegie institutions and all that? And I can say this, Dr. Kustra and Dr. Schimpf as the provost and now the interim president have done some unbelievable things to make Boise State University academically and the programs and the doctoral degrees and the postgraduate degrees and the size of the campus and all that, you know, along that way to put you in the conversation for that. And then athletically, our football program has backed it up with the play on the field to where you feel like you've got an opportunity if that were to ever happen. I think the big thing is so much now is driven by revenue that can be brought into a conference. And you read stories now about how the Pac-12 is even saying out there that we can't keep pace with the Big Ten or the SEC or the Big 12 on our revenue. So right now they're like, why would we split that two more ways or four more ways unless there becomes some giant four conference, 16 team super leagues that may come down to, you know, all the money that's in there for the CFP and the college football playoffs. Most of it is driven by either the college football playoff, which is not run by the NCAA, ironically. It's run by the televisions and the network and all that, or the NCAA basketball tournament, which is the number one revenue driver from an NCAA standpoint. Right now, Boise State, from a football standpoint, has put itself in a position to be in the conversation for expansion because of our football program and the CFP. But we've got to make sure we're putting ourselves year in and year out in a position to go to a New Year Six game. Competitively, we have to remain on the forefront of that. And right now, our whole mentality is based on five numbers. Yeah, I'm going to give you guys a little something. Five numbers.
I love it.
You want to hear it?
Yes.
8-31-19. I don't know if you guys know what that is, but 8-31-19 is when we roll into Jacksonville, Florida and play Florida State. And we haven't had, I mean, even Oklahoma State last year was a great opportunity, but you got to go back to the Georgia in 10, or Virginia Tech in 10, Georgia in 11, to really say that this is an opportunity for our football program and our university and our community to be on the stage like we're going to be against a traditional blue blood in their backyard against Florida State. And so our focus right now is how do we prepare everything we can to put this thing in a position to show the world what we're and the nation what we're about, what Boise State and Boise, Idaho is about on 8-31-19. And it is exciting because that's what, when I go to bed at night and I wake up in the morning, I am fired up about those five numbers because we got a chance to do something special and you don't get that many opportunities. We tell our guys that and our players, you don't get that many opportunities to do what you're going to have the chance to do on 8-31. So are you giving everything you can every single day to get yourself better, to put yourself in a position and represent a lot of people that are going to be, you know, rooting for the Broncos on that given day?
Hey, Brad, 25 years, dedicated service and a lot of experience. What's one thing for our listeners that they might not know about either the football program or the athletic program, Boise State, that you hold dear,
yeah,
that drives you?
I would just say it's a family feel that sometimes maybe gets overshadowed in this whole idea of corporate hierarchy and big time college athletics that I've always felt is so awesome about Boise State and Boise State athletics, that you feel like when you go to work every day that you just don't, you know, your interaction with an athletic director like Kurt Apsey or a head football coach like Brian Harsin or even Chris Peterson before, you're part of something that is bigger than yourself, that but still has a very small town family feel to it. And we have people that come in there and want to make an impact, but they aren't doing it just for 2 years to get to the next stop, that they really want to be a part of something long term. And they're doing it because it is the best thing for the students and the student athletes that come to this university. We're transforming lives. That's the way I look at it. And it could be the lives of a student athlete that comes in there, a player, a female student, whatever it is. It could be somebody that's on that campus. It could be a donor that is really, you know, excited about what we're doing. It could be a business that's got a sponsorship that is able to grow because of being affiliated with us. Whatever it is, we're transforming something. It could be just encouraging that little kid that's in the hospital that has a chance to come visit our football players, and David Moa says to him, hang in there, man, have that Bronco spirit. Whatever it is, we're transforming lives. And I think it really is a special privilege that we have to be a part of an athletic department like that.
Brad, finally, what motivates you personally?
What motivates me personally? I'm motivated by celebrating moments that where you've made an impact. Sometimes that's winning, you know, championships or being a part of that. But I think it's about being able to celebrate and have fun. And there's nothing better than an athletic or a sporting event or being around it. Because in life where you've got the day-to-day grind and you got to get up and you get in patterns of, okay, I got to get up at 6 a.m. and I got to brush my teeth and I got to get to the office and all those things, you want to be able to celebrate joy. I mean, and I think that's what we've done with our athletic program, is try to bring a little bit of that sense of joy and celebration. And I just love being able to talk about that kind of thing and be inspired by being able to celebrate small victories, whatever they are. Today was the first day of spring football, and out there seeing those guys run around, and after having not being able to finish a bowl game against Boston College, that was a sour taste. Just seeing our guys out there run around, that was celebrating. That was fun. That was awesome. And that carried me through this entire day to where I was fired up to come talk to you guys about that and celebrate this moment. And I think that's what really motivates me every day, besides my awesome wife and two daughters, which I got to make sure I throw in there. So. Great.
Brad, thank you.
Yeah, that was fun, guys. Are we already done?
That's it.
Yeah.
Shoot. We could do some wind sprints in a minute if you'd like. But,
well, you know, we're going to get out there. We've got some burpees and some up downs we got to get going with.
I want to see Kevin, you and I doing burpees.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, you go first. All right. And to everybody else, we hope to inspire your excellence.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.